He says he does. He says you get your delivery here on the beach, that someone brings it to you. Is that true?
Son, there is no truth.
He says the next time you get delivery, he's going to be there. He's got some scheme where he picks up both the cash and the junk.
Not possible. It doesn't work that way.
What way?
It doesn't work anyway.
How do you get it?
I pray for it, and it comes. You're a good boy, Fletch, but you're not too bright. Has anyone ever told you that before?
Yes.
I bet they have. No one's going to rip off Vatsyayana.
Is it possible? I mean, you could be ripped off.
No way. Not possible. Just relax. By tomorrow noon, I should have some reds.
Can you make it?
Give me the H.
Give me the 20.
No one would want you ripped off, Sam.
If it ever happened, it would be bye-bye highs.
No one would want that to happen.
Of course not.
The Stanwyck residence.
Fletch had turned on the fan in the roof of the telephone booth to dampen the sound of traffic.
Mrs. Stanwyck, please.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Stanwyck isn't in. May I take a message?
We're calling from the Rackets Club. Do you have any idea where Mrs. Stanwyck is?
Why, she should be there, sir, at the club. She was playing this morning, and she said she would be staying for lunch. I think she's meeting her father there.
Ah, then she's here now.
Yes, sir. She planned to spend most of the day at the club.
We'll have a look for her. Sorry to bother you.
Sunday morning traffic at the beach was heavy. Down the street was a department store. Fletch bought a new T-shirt, a pair of white socks, and a pair of tennis shorts.
Chapter 12. You're Joan Stanwyck, aren't you?
She was sitting alone at a table for two overlooking the tennis courts. A half-empty martini on the rocks was in front of her.
Why, yes.
I haven't seen you since your wedding.
Are you a friend of Alan's?
We were in the Air Force together, Fletch said, in San Antonio. I haven't seen Alan in years.
You're very clever to have recognized me.
How could I forget? May I sit down?
Fletch had left his car in the club parking lot and had gone around the building past the kitchen door to the service entrance to the locker rooms. The freshest sign on a locker door said Underwood, a new member. They and their guests could not yet be well known to the club staff. When he had come onto the tennis pavilion, the head waiter had said,
"Pardon me, sir, are you a guest of the club?"
Fletch had answered, "I'm a guest of the Underwoods."
"They're not here, sir, I haven't seen them."
"They're coming later."
"Very good, sir. Perhaps you'd like a drink while you're waiting."
Fletch had spotted Joan Stanwyck.
"We'll put it on the Underwood bill. A screwdriver, please."
He sat at Joan Stanwyck's table.
"I'm afraid my memory isn't so good, although it should be," Joan Stanwyck said. "I can't remember your name."
"No one can," Fletch said. "The world's most forgettable name. Utrelemensky, John Utrelemensky."
"John, I can remember."
On the table was a Polaroid camera.
"Are you from this area, John?"
"No, Butte, Montana. I'm here on business. In fact, I'm leaving on a mid-afternoon plane."
"And what business would that be?"
"Furniture. We sell to hotels, that sort of thing."
"I see. Too bad you won't be able to see Alan. He's at a flying convention in Idaho."
"Alan's still flying?"
"Relentlessly.
Unlike some of the rest of us, he really enjoyed it.
I'll never forget the time he buzzed a house in San Antonio with a training jet."
"He buzzed a house?"
"He never told you? Shattered glass. The police were out after him. He was severely reprimanded for it."
"Funny the things husbands don't tell you."
"Well, I expect he's not too proud of it."
"How nice to meet an old friend of Alan's. I mean, meet again. Tell me more."
"Only wrong thing I ever knew of him doing. We weren't that close anyway. I just happened to be out here the week of the wedding, bumped into him, and he said, 'Come along.'"
"But surely you're a good deal younger than my husband."
"Not much," Fletch said. "I'm 30.
"You look young for your age."
"The furniture business has been good to me."
Well, I'm sure Alan will be sorry to have missed you.
I'm not so sure.
Oh?
We had a political difference at your reception.
About what?
I made some crack about big business. Alan didn't like it a bit.
How could you?
There was mockery in her eyes. I was younger then. I had not yet received a corporate paycheck.
Did you say anything about his marrying the boss's daughter?
No, is that what he did?
He married the boss's daughter, me. He's a bit sensitive about that. That's probably why he got so angry.
Oh, I see. I hadn't realized that. Oh, I guess I really goofed.
Never mind. He's been accused of it enough times. Poor Alan spends all his available time proving he married me for myself and not for Papa's business.
He works for your father?
I'm not sure at the moment who works for whom. Alan runs the place. Dad runs tennis tournaments. In fact, these days, Dad does pretty much what Alan tells him.
Alan always was very competent.
Remarkably. What sort of a business is this, anyway? Collins Aviation.
Oh, I never heard of it, sorry.
You wouldn't have, unless you were in the aviation business. It makes parts for airplanes the actual airplane manufacturers put together.
Not exactly a dry cleaning shop.
Not exactly. You see how bad I am at business. I don't even follow the stock market. Very little of Collins Aviation stock is available. It belongs mostly to us.
The whole thing?
To us and a few family friends. You know, like the family doctor, Dad's old Harvard roommate, Joe Devlin. People like that. All as rich as Croesus.
How nice.
It is nice to have everyone you know rich. Problems never come up about who pays the drink bill.
Would you like another?
Why, John, how nice.
He signaled a waiter.
By the way, John, how did you gain entree to the Racquets Club?
I'm a guest of the Underwoods. He and I are doing a little business together. He knew my plane was not leaving until mid-afternoon, so he suggested I come over, hit a ball, and have a swim.
The Underwoods? I don't know them. They must be new members.
I'm sure I wouldn't know.
But where's your tennis racket?
I borrowed one. I just returned it to the pro shop.
I see.
A martini on the rocks, please, and a screwdriver, he said. The waiter said, "Yes, Mrs. Stanwyck."
The Racquets Club is Daddy's pet. He darn near built the place himself. In fact, he's endowed it so well, the Racquets Club is a major stockholder in Collins Aviation. That very chair you're sitting on was probably designed for an airport lounge in Albany. Does Albany have an airport?
Albany, New York?
Yes.
Who cares?
Good point. Who cares about Albany, New York?
Except the Albanians.
Except the Albanians. Ooh. Yeah, I usually don't drink martinis after playing tennis in the morning.
What do you usually do after playing tennis in the morning?
I wouldn't mind doing that either, she said. Alan's away a lot. Mondays and Wednesdays, he never gets home before 11 o'clock at night. The ends of the weeks, he's apt to get in his airplane and go somewhere on business. Business, business, business. Ah, here's another drink.
The waiter said, "Here you are, Mrs. Stanwyck."
"To business," she said.
"He never comes home until 11 on Mondays and Wednesdays?" Fletch repeated.
"Very late. On Thursdays, I have a committee meeting here at the club. Just as well. The servants at home are out. Julie and I have supper here at the club. Julie's my daughter. You haven't met her yet. I don't know what happens to Alan on Thursdays. That leaves us exactly Tuesdays together. He's always very attentive on Tuesdays. I remember Alan got a piece of metal stuck in him overseas. He's got a scar on his belly and a purple heart.
Is he all right now?"
"Perfect. He's in perfect physical condition."
"He is."
"Why are you so incredulous?"
"Oh, he always worried about having cancer. Every time he lit a cigarette, he'd mention it. He called them cancer sticks."
"I have noted no such justifiable neuroticism on his part."
"He's never had cancer?"
"God, don't even say it."
"Remarkable."
"What is?"
"That he's never had cancer."
"He doesn't smoke all that much. But for you, John, whatever your last name is, there seems nothing wrong with you."
"I never went overseas," Fletch said.
You seem quite perfect.
Overflight.
What?
Overflight. I'm trying to think of the name of Alan's best man. Over something?
Eberhardt. Bert Eberhardt.
That's it.
He struck me as a nice guy. Is he still around?
You have some memory. He's still around, fat and balding. He lives here on the beach on Vizard Road. Married to a social climber, 3 ugly kids. He's in the insurance business.
The insurance business?
Yes. He handles Alan's insurance, now the company's insurance, and the club's. He's been well set up by Alan. They were friends at Colgate.
Sounds like a good business. Seeing Alan still flying, he's probably got a lot of insurance on him.
A foolish amount. My father wanted to teach Alan, via the route of monthly premiums paid by Alan himself, the value of Alan's precious life. An effort to get him to stop flying after Julie was born. It worked not at all. Alan remains perfectly willing to cast his wife and child to the insurance adjuster, just to climb through the clouds to sudden sunlight once again.
Alan pays the premiums, not the company?
When we say the company in my family, we mean my father. Dad obliges Alan to have such insurance coverage as a condition of his employment, but Alan must pay the bill himself. Dad's very cute at making such arrangements. Pity they never work.
I should think from what you say, Alan would need to get away and have some fun by himself once in a while.
There's the club.
He relaxes when he flies, he said.
And everyone else has heart failure. I hate to think what he's flying this weekend, for fun.
You wouldn't even recognize those experimental craft he flies as airplanes. They look like the mean, nasty sort of weapons Aborigines throw through the air. Horrifying. It must be tough on you.
I wish he'd stop flying.
One thing I've always wondered about.
Dad is late for lunch.
Is he coming?
He was supposed to meet me here 20 minutes ago.
Perhaps I should leave.
No, no, he'd be happy to meet you. Any friend of Alan's and all that. What were you wondering about? Why Alan's parents didn't come to the wedding?
Alan's parents?
Yes. They're estranged. He never sees them.
He never sees them?
Does that surprise you?
Yes, it does. I had the idea they were rather close.
No way. He hates them. Alan always has. I've never even met them.
How can that be so?
You must be thinking of someone else.
I'm sure Alan used to fly home to see his parents whenever he could, every 6 weeks or so.
Not Alan. His parents were very pushy toward him. The crisis came, I think, at the Golden Gloves.
The Golden Gloves? I remember Alan had boxed.
Alan boxed because his father made him, pushed him right up the ladder or whatever into the state Golden Gloves when he was 15. Every day after school he had to spend in the basement at home, boxing until supper time. He hated it. He refused to go into the Nationals. He and his father have never spoken since then.
Well, I must be confused.
You must be. And he's always said his mother is a sickly, neurotic thing, spends most of her time in bed.
Aren't you interested in these people, Alan's parents? Aren't you curious to meet them yourself?
Not if what Alan says is true about them. And I'm sure it is. Why wouldn't it be?
Believe me, honey, I have enough difficult people around me not to want to add in-laws.
I see.
There was a stir in the pavilion as a handsome, distinguished-looking man in his 50s entered, dressed in white tennis slacks and blue blazer. People reacted like children in a sandbox, catching sight of someone coming with a box of popsicles. They waved from their tables. Men nearest the entrance stood up to shake hands. Women beamed. The head waiter welcomed with happy bows of his head.
"There," Jones said, "is Dad."
Fletch said, "Yes, I remember him."
"Don't be disappointed if he doesn't remember you."
"Why should he remember me?" Fletch said.
"Because you're beautiful," she said. "You really turn me on. Are you sure you have to leave town today?"
"I've got to be back tonight."
"But tomorrow's Sunday."
"Listen," Fletch said, "you and Alan ought to have a place you can go and be by yourselves once in a while. I mean, a place of your own."
"The ranch."
"What?"
"Alan is buying a ranch in Nevada for us."
"Great."
"No, it isn't great. It's awful. Who wants a ranch in Nevada?"
"Most people."
"I spent a summer on a ranch when I was a kid. Hot, dusty, dirty, boring, incredibly boring.
All the men look like pretzels, and when they talk, they sound like a Dick and Jane book. It comes out slow and ends up obvious. And you don't talk about anything that hasn't got four legs. I mean, sitting around looking at a cow is not my idea of pleasure. Then why are you doing it? Alan wants to. He thinks the ranch is a great idea as an investment. I haven't even been out to look at it. He insists he's taking me next weekend.
Next weekend?
I can't tell you how I'm looking forward to it.
It's a place you could be alone together.
Like hell. There's an airstrip in the backyard. I know that already. As long as there's an airplane in the backyard, Alan will be off on an important business deal somewhere, and I'll be left staring at cows with a bunch of pretzels and blue jeans.
So stop it. Stop Alan from buying it.
Supposedly he's taking the down payment, the cash, out himself next weekend.
The cash? As cash?
Yes, isn't that crazy? Cash. He said cash, visible cash, is the only way to do business with these people. If he shows up with cash in a brown paper bag or something, flashes the real stuff, he might save percentages from the purchase price.
Well, they must be more sophisticated than that.
This is deep in Nevada, honey. How do you know what appeals to a pretzel in blue jeans with a cow on its mind? Oh, Dad.
Pletch stood up.
This is an old friend of Alan's. They were in the Air Force together. John...
Shaking hands, Fletch said, Yemenarileski. Glad to meet you, Mr. Yemenarileski, John Collins said. Stay and have lunch with us. Chapter 13. Fletch brought a chair from a neighboring table and sat in it. John Collins sat facing his daughter. At 1 o'clock, the sunlit tennis courts were empty. The pavilion was full. Joan had moved the Polaroid camera.
John's in the furniture business, Dad, from Grand Rapids, Michigan.
From Butte, Montana, Fletch said. Oh? Fletch was correct.
Besides no one's being able to remember for long the name he gave, no one cared to inquire too deeply into either the furniture business or Butte, Montana. He believed himself absolutely unmemorable.
Martinis before lunch? John Collins said.
I mean to take a nap this afternoon. Joan stared at Fletch.
I'm glad to see at least John is drinking orange juice.
It's a screwdriver.
Ah, well, if you drink enough of those, they'll make your head hammer.
John Collins beamed at them both. His daughter groaned softly.
You play tennis, John?
Just hack about, sir. I enjoy the game, but I have so little time for it.
You must make time in life to enjoy yourself and be healthy. It's the best way to get a lot done.
Yes, sir.
Of course, it also helps if you have a very able son-in-law to take over your business and run it for you. Sometimes I feel guilty that I'm playing and Alan is working.
How do you know Alan? We were in the Air Force together in Texas. John said that Alan buzzed a house once in San Antonio. Did he ever mention that to you, Dad?
He certainly didn't.
We were lieutenants then, Fletch said. He was severely reprimanded. I guess I talked out of school.
Delighted you did, John Collins said. Time we had a bit of dirt on Alan. I'll put his nose in it. Got any more dirt?
No, sir.
He's off flying someone's idea of an airplane in Idaho this weekend, John said. Do you still fly?
Only with a ticket in my hand.
Good for you. I wish Alan would give it up. He's too important to too many people to be taking such risks. Were you overseas with him?
No, sir. I was sent to the Aleutians.
Oh. Fletch smiled. No one cared about the Aleutians either. Without having ordered, John Collins was brought a grilled cheese sandwich and a bottle of ale. Aren't you two going to order? He asked.
Sliced chicken sandwich, Joan said, mayonnaise. A grilled cheese, Fletch added. Bottle of Coors beer.
How very ingratiating of you, John Collins said. He was used to young men complimenting him over his choice of lunch. Fletch laughed.
I'm very happy in the furniture business, thank you.
Actually, Alan needs more young men around him. Friends, people he can trust. He's stuck with all my old office cronies. I keep telling him he should retire them all off, but he's too smart for that. He says he would rather have attrition than contrition.
Dad, he never said anything of the sort.
Well, he would have if he had a sense of humor.
He has a lovely sense of humor, Joan said.
Tell me something he ever said that made you laugh, John said. Anything.
Well, he said something to Julie the other day, but I can't remember it. Something about going to bed.
A riot, John said. My son-in-law is a riot.
Did he have a sense of humor when you knew him in Texas?
A pretty serious fellow, Fletch said. I worry about people who don't have a sense of humor. Oh, here's your lunch. Take everything seriously. They're apt to kill themselves.
If the cigarettes don't get them first, Fletch said.
What? John Collins leaned on him.
The cigarettes. Alan was always dreadfully afraid of cancer.
He should be. No one should smoke.
Joan said, Alan's never mentioned his fear of cancer to me.
We must be used to it, Fletch said, or over it. Everybody should be afraid of cancer. Does it run in his family? Of course, how do we know? Never met his family. Ought to look them up and see if they're still alive.
Alan never speaks of them, Joan said. I doubt he ever hears from them.
I don't blame him. Any man who makes his son box is a jackass, a stupid sport. Alan would have been a great tennis player if he'd started young and not been forced to waste all his time getting bopped on the nose. Rather, I should say, any man who forces his son to box wants to see him in a coffin.
You're in top form today, Dad, one right after the other.
Why not? Pleasant company. His father just never realized what an intelligent lad Alan was, and is. Wonder he didn't get his brains knocked out of him.
Before you came, Dad, we were talking about the damn fool ranch Alan is buying in Nevada.
Yes, good idea.
It's a terrible idea. This family doesn't have anywhere near enough invested in real estate.
And what there is downtown space, or the place in Aspen, whatnot. We should be much more heavily invested in land. No one's ever wanted to manage it. I'm glad Alan does.
Joan said, I hate the whole idea.
Well, you don't have to go there.
The way Alan talks, 1 million acres in Nevada is going to be our spiritual home.
You will have to go there once in a while, of course, while Alan goes over things. Do you both good to get away with Julie. You must be sick to death of your mother and me living on top of you.
She's not well.
John said, I remember the first day I saw your mother taking martinis before lunch. Gin is a depressant, my girl.
My golly, you do live on top of us. I never noticed before.
Was Jim Swartout helpful? John asked.
Who?
Jim Swartout of Swartout Nevada Realty. Biggest firm in Nevada. I sent Alan to him when he began talking about the ranch. I understood he's been dealing with him.
Oh, yes, very helpful. He's the man who found the ranch for Alan. He's mentioned him several times. He is the real estate broker. We're going down next weekend, cash in hand.
Cheer up, old girl. Alan's dead right about our investing in a ranch. He couldn't be more right.
John Collins strained his ale.
Now the job is to see if we can get young John here a tennis match.
No, sir, thank you anyway. I haven't the time at this point. My plane leaves mid-afternoon.
Oh. The man seemed genuinely disappointed. I'm sorry to hear that.
This is a beautiful club, though. Joan mentioned the extent of your contribution to it.
Well, she shouldn't have. But I consider it very important. Young people have to have a place to go and healthy things to do. You know, I understand young people can't even go to the beach here anymore.
Oh?
Drugs. God damn it, drugs everywhere. On the beach of all places. Hard drugs. Heroin, opium. Let alone these pills and amphetamines. Sending a youngster to the beach these days is equal to sending him to hell.
People literally selling drugs to children, pushing drugs on them. Can you imagine anything worse than that? Joan said. What sort of an insane, evil person would actually urge children to take drugs for just a few bucks?
I've had several conversations with the chief of police, Chief Cummings, John Collins said, urging him to crack down more actively on this business. I've even offered to pay to have special investigators come in to clean the whole thing up. That's a bill I wouldn't mind paying at all. He tells me he's doing everything he can. He has an informer on the beach, he says. But it's very difficult, as young people drift in and out, live on the beach, go by phony names. Apparently, it's much too fluid a situation to control. There are no constants. He said special investigators wouldn't do a darn bit of good.
I didn't know you made that offer, Dad. How sweet.
It's not sweet. It's necessary. With the rate of burglaries we're having here at the beach, muggings and robberies, something has to be done. There's going to be a murder soon, and then people will sit up. But what really bothers me is all these young people staggering around, destroying their brains, destroying their bodies, killing themselves. How very awful for them. They don't know better. Their lives must be just hell. Fletch said, I quite agree with you, sir. However, the esteemed chief of police is retiring soon, and a man close to retirement isn't apt to be at his most energetic. That's what I keep telling Alan. Retire the old farts. Give them their money and let them go. They're not doing anything for the company anyway. Chief Cummings is busy setting up some retirement home. He's not paying attention to police business here in town. Might as well get rid of him. Perhaps after he retires, we'll have a better chance to wipe out this nest of vipers and sickies. Fletch said, You never can tell. The thing might break by itself somehow. I'd like to see it, John Collins said, and I'd like to know who's going to do it. Well, Fletch said, the club is just great. There are no drugs here, John Collins said, except for martinis imbibed before lunch by certain dopes. Chapter 14. Using his telephone credit card, Fletch spent an hour in an overstuffed chair in the playroom of the Rackets Club. The room was dark and cool, and no one was at the billiards tables or the ping-pong tables or watching the television. First, he called the home number of Marvin Stanwyck in Nonhegan, Pennsylvania. Mr. Stanwyck?
Yes?
This is Sidney James of Casewell Insurers of California.
How are you, boy? What did you decide about picking up that Bronze Star?
I haven't decided yet, sir.
Doubt you'll ever be offered another one.
I didn't expect to be offered this one.
I say you should pick it up. Never know, you might have a son someday who'd have some interest in it, or a grandson.
I don't know, sir. Women don't seem to be having children these days.
You know you're right about that. I wouldn't mind Alan and his wife producing a child.
What? Don't you think it's time they had a child? Been married how long? 6, 7 years? They don't have a child?
Indeed not. That would get us to come out to California. Boy, girl, anything. We wouldn't miss seeing our grandchild.
I see.
Well, Mr. James, I imagine you called to ask how we are again. Mrs. Stanwyck and I are both well. Just beginning to think about lunch.
Glad to hear it, sir.
You must be a pretty ambitious fellow working on a Saturday. I have to go back to the hardware store myself after lunch, but I thought I was the only man left alive who still works on a Saturday. Of course, in your case, you may have to work on Saturday because you spend so much time the rest of the week calling up people.
We're trying to pin down just how much flying your son does.
Too much.
You say he comes to see you every 6 weeks or so?
About that.
How long does he stay with you?
A night or two.
Does he stay in your house?
No, he and the co-pilot, or whatever he is, stay at the Nonhegan Inn. They have a suite there. Alan's like you. If he's not on the phone 45 minutes an hour, he thinks the world's going to end. He needs the hotel switchboard.
How much do you actually see him on a visit?
I'm not sure I'll ever get used to your questions, but a man who won the Bronze Star must know what he's doing. Mostly they come for breakfast.
They?
He and the co-pilot. Name is Bucky. That's why my wife always makes him buckwheat cakes. He loves them. He can put away more buckwheat cakes than you need to shingle your roof.
Is it always the same pilot?